know, how Proof started and what people's individual interests are in this area.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Well, I don't know how it started. I just joined it. But I like the idea of incorporating graphic novels into teaching. And I've been doing it the whole time I've been teaching, but I haven't done it, like, formally or officially, like, mm-hmm. have things on paper. It was like a closed door, don't tell anyone kind of thing. A few years ago, when I joined the learning community with the link, I was able to, I found myself more bringing it into our discussions, because with theater, there was so much, they had the elements of theater, and they had so many things that they needed to know, but they were having a hard time remembering them. And if you connect it with something like you see all the time, like Wonder Woman, Superman. At the time, there were a lot of the Avengers had just come out, and there were a lot of comic book anniversaries coming up, like 75 years of this guy and 65 years of this guy. So it was easier to access those things when we had a smart board. Mm-hmm. So I just pull it up, right. And we can talk about it and connect it to whatever they were doing in the theater and in mm-hmm. English class. So I started making up work in class writing that would connect with it. Remember what we did last week? Well, okay. Well, I wrote something on it. Let's mm-hmm. you know, let's get into groups and do something about it. So it became more formal. Mm-hmm. So when we started doing when the FIG came about, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, I can contribute. I can learn something mm-hmm. from this. So I decided, okay, to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's been even more helpful. I went to the conference this past April.
Yeah.
With the trends,
yeah,
and talked about it, and been doing it more formally in class, and this semester I'm doing Green Lantern's Sinestro Core Wars mm-hmm. as their one of their main texts. Mm-hmm. So it's become a lot open door
right.
policy
right.
more now
right.
than you know behind and
right.
don't tell anybody.
So I think. I think it all came about, Eileen had approached Jean about the FIG, and then I think you approached me. And
yeah,
then
actually, Rob Callen let me, because we were having some informal meetings about
uh-huh.
graphic novels, and Rob Callen said,
yeah.
He's
big,
you know
yeah.
about KCTL and FIGs? And I'm like,
yeah.
How many acronyms can you use?
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good one, yeah.
By the time he unpacked it all, it just seemed a sort of inevitable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess I started with it. My interest as a scholar has always been in autobiography and memoir and nonfiction. Mm-hmm. I you know, so I've written about you know travel writing and natural history
yes.
writing and things like this and a lot of stuff about memoir and a lot of stuff about a series of articles about the Human Genome Project because
mm-hmm.
I was a failed science student.
Oh, yeah.
I've always had an interest
right
in science. Here. Anyway, I think what first hooked me was Mouse. And I just remember the time I was reading it. This was in 1987 on the subway late at night from the grad center. And somebody came up to me and said, if you don't close that book, I'm going to read that. And I guess he thought of it as, you know, some wickedly nasty cartoon propaganda because there's a swastika on the
right.
cover.
Right.
So, but he had
right.
a look on his face
right.
that just made
he
me say,
no
"I was
yeah.
about to close this book." Anyway.
Yes.
But
yes.
I, you know, but the misunderstandings
yes.
that the book caused in my family and with one of my dear friends of mine who were Holocaust survivors,
right.
I sent
right.
them a copy of the book
yes.
as I had sent them many books in the
yes.
past, and they had actually come to my class to talk about Night. They were not shy talking about this, and they mailed the book back. Saying this isn't for us, and of course I went over to their house for dinner and we remained friends, but yeah, saying this is a different sort of book and I've liked the reactions in class because there's very often that dissonant I don't get this and sometimes that opens a space, you know. So now I'm doing Fun Home and Gatsby, and if you've read either book you know that protagonist of Fun Home is obsessed with Gatsby. There are all these connections about houses and passing. So I've been using that in my lit class for a couple of semesters, and I found it very, very both challenging and accessible. You know, the students can dive right in, but there's a deep end to the pool. You know, a lot of people, as we've all been discussing in the figs, you know, that the knock on comics and graphic novels is that it's pandering. It's lit light, or it's not even lit. It's just pop culture. You know, it's the Beatles instead of Beethoven.
With comic books, a lot of what everybody said already, you know, I've always referred to them as themes and things, and students have always been receptive to that. And I taught a 12th with it, and it was a great experience to find that I'd have students who are in my 12 right now because they heard from other people that I was into graphic novels. Mm-hmm. So that caught their interest, and it was one of the reasons they said, why not? Let's help. So it's moved on from shutting the door and hiding. And also working with it, I've always found it as a legitimate form of literature. I did. I'm so glad that it's catching on. I mean, I know all forms, we have high and low, but it is, I always thought it was because the references, the things like what the writers do, I went into Stan Lee's history and all these other writers. I love to go into a touch of the memoir. I love knowing about them. And when they talk about graphic novels and comic books, they're always, a lot of them are humanities people, English literature people, scholars, really. And then they take that and it's all there. And you know, something like The Watchmen won, you know, and is considered high literature and part of the literary world. So I'm really happy about that. And also on a personal level, very much so, my first introduction to, you know, the outsider theme, comic books and graphic novels, that was really important to me, especially an arena that really honestly dealt with Muslim characters, where nowhere else you've seen Muslim characters or any who are a complex, multidimensional instead of one, you know, stereotypical image that the general society would promote. Mm-hmm. We don't have. So to find that, it was so refreshing and breathtaking, and finally a sense of peace came over, that there is an area where, you know, we're not all evil. Thank you. That was good. And also, even more, for female reasons, the first time I ever saw Wonder Woman, it was the first time a superhero with black hair. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe that was considered beautiful. And finally, she was there, and she had black hair.
Right.
And I just thought that was...
Right.
So this arena gave me so much, so I couldn't help but be taken by it. And wanted to.
Mm-hmm. It was open.
Yeah.
It was open.
So I mean,
you're the visual guy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can pretty much gauge like every important moment of my life based on like what comic book I was reading at the time. Like I learned how to read like around like Amazing Spider-Man like 355, and like you know, like I'll never forget, like it was like Spider-Man versus Puma. Like I showed my dad, like, dude, he's fighting Puma. My dad's like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, no, but he just said, and my dad was like, what? Like, you're three. Like, you read that?
That's
like, yeah, that's what he said,
Alexi.
Right?
That's
so,
really. He said that.
When I first, when I first started teaching, you know, I went with, like, you know, the classics, Anthropologists from Mars, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and
right.
I always found, like, the first couple of weeks of the semester, it was always a hassle to get the kids
right,
to get the
board.
Book.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and you'd get
right.
the excuse, like, oh, the bookstore doesn't have it, or Amazon, I'm waiting for my Amazon shipment. So, you know, my 24 is themed around, like, the pursuit of truth and, like, normality.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to myself, because, like, I run my own entertainment website, I've been getting free comic books for, you know, 7 years or whatever, and I'm like, if I can find good books that relate to these things and use those the first couple of weeks... And then get to Anthropologists
right,
from Mars.
Right, right.
You know, so this way no one would have any excuses. Everyone would be on the same page. We'd create like almost like an
yes.
academic parody,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yes.
And they ended up loving the books
mm-hmm.
and constantly referring to them. And then when I got the opportunity to go on the subline, and they gave me English 30 and English 40, like short fiction
mm-hmm.
and comic books just worked perfect together.
Yeah.
So then we were doing one shots. like Wild Rover and Resident Alien, and they touch upon like being an outsider and drug and alcohol abuse and all of the things that like went into all of the other stories that we were reading. It just worked out great. And I love the medium. I connect with it. And it is deep and it is vast and it has a rich history. So, when Gene approached me to like be a part of this, I was like, this is perfect, you know? So yeah, I think it definitely has a place in, in what we do. And I would love to hear like your thoughts on how we can get published for our academic discourse based on this stuff. Yeah.
Well, it does feel like, it's having its moment, right? So that time where you might have felt this is it needs to stay a secretive kind of activity, or it's low literature instead of high literature. I think that that's past, and I can tell you my experience with working with submissions that involve classroom experience writing about working with graphic text. That's what I can tell you about. So it's funny, I was thinking about this topic and JBW, and I was thinking, wait a minute, JBW really doesn't do much of this. Okay, I get it, because Gene read a manuscript in process. I asked him to help me with a writer who was putting together an article that just didn't seem to be getting on solid footing, although it was part of a collaborative teaching project. So it wasn't something where this particular writer just threw a paper together. It wasn't a thought piece. He was trying to reflect on this project where he worked with at least one other teacher and over a number of semesters working with students on storyboarding. All right, so I thought, okay, well, there is that. That's coming up. That article took about, I'd say maybe a year and a half, 2 years. That's on the late end of articles. They usually don't take that long to develop, but this particular person was writing in a field where he didn't really know how to situate the scholarship and his readers, you know, the reviewers and myself and another editor, we had to figure it out too. So there was that. And then I remember about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, you also read Susan Naomi Bernstein's. Yes. So there's that that came out in JBW. And then I remember, so we have two since 2008. Mm-hmm. And then I remembered, oh my, the first piece that I published was using graphics, and that was in JBW, and it was at a different time in scholarship. It was, I don't know, could it be, I don't know, 18 years ago or so, 20 years ago? So what's required of scholarship today was not in full play back then. Back then, it was easier to write about classroom experience. Today, it becomes a little thornier.
Mm-hmm.
But what I had done was I had put into practice an exercise with students where I had them graphically represent their revision process. So they drew what they did to represent their revision process. So some of them did webs, some of them did circular types of things, representations. They were all over the place. So I wrote about that, and I thought, well, gee, that's interesting, because I didn't really think of myself as someone writing about graphic work within teaching or scholarship. So there are two articles that you could look at, and a third, which I'll talk about, which situate the use of graphic material in the classroom within JBW. within Journal of Basic Writing. One is an article by Susan Naomi Bernstein. And these are on JSTOR. They'll come up. Just Google the name and maybe a keyword such as part of her title is Material Realities. And it's about this group of mostly young women reading Persepolis in, I think it's Detroit, during a time of economic depression. And she situates the use of that that graphic novel within this community of women who are feeling disempowered. And then there's another one, the one that I just mentioned. It's coming out, though it'll be a while, but his name is John Balzotti, B-A-L-Z-O-T-T-I, and he's doing an article on storyboarding. It's basically done. So there's that. Here's that one. And then there's another one I wanted to discuss, and it's from Tom Peel, P-E-E-L-E, and you can get this online, too. It's from JBW. And I'm going to show it to you. And Melissa Antonori, and they're from LIU. Well, they were from LIU. Tom has since moved on to City College, and Melissa, I think, is still at LIU. But when I thought of what article to share with you, and I put some material together here, when I thought of what article to share with you, I thought of Tom's and Melissa's, and it kind of surprised me that it occurred to me to share this article. And the reason is it's not about graphic novels. It's about students' use of iBook, which is a Mac modality for putting together portfolios. But so it has that visual component. And this is from the article. And it's essentially their first page, the first page of different iBook portfolios. And so it does have the visual dimension. And what I was struck by as I went back and reread it for this purpose was that that article, we worked with Tom, we worked with Melissa, again, it takes a while to get something, and to create the context. I'll talk to you about what context we like, you know, in terms of a JBW article. It takes a while to get there, but this article has a lot of the pieces to the puzzle that an article dealing with graphic novels in the classroom would have. All right. Now, originally, I was going to Xerox a whole article. I just Xeroxed a few pages of it, but that's okay. And the reason is because I couldn't fit this whole thick packet of papers to Xerox in the Xerox. It messed up the whole machine, so I revised what I was doing. All right. So, okay, so I really like Tom Peel's and Melissa Antonori's article, and I think it has a usefulness for your purposes of working toward an article talking about your classroom work with graphic novels. Am I right that that's what you're thinking toward?
Sure.
So as I was looking through, for example, as I was looking through this packet that Jean gave me. This is incredible, by the way. There are a lot of journals here that I didn't know about.
Oh, and this is... I'm going to explain this later.
Right.
We made a journal agreement, Hope and I, that she knows a ton more than I do about composition, rhetoric.
Right,
That's a field that you're much more fluent in.
Right, I'm not going to address this.
And these are mostly cultural studies journals.
Right,
so we're going to cover two different sort of sides.
But when I went through this, I noticed that graphic novels, is really its own world. It's its own literature. So these journals have articles in them where they're essentially honing in on certain themes, and they're doing a lot of text-to-text stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As say, a scholarly journal would mm-hmm. in dealing with a particular text, right? So that's happening here. But what I could talk to you, and that I can't talk about because I don't know the texts,
mm-hmm.
right? But what I do know about is working with, a framework, developing a framework, and a full context of classroom particularity to create an article that reaches other scholar practitioners who are interested in both the theory and the practice of what you have to offer. So the text themselves, the text-to-text and, you know, and how one, the appearance of a new graphic novel on the scene impacts the scene in general, impacts the whole field, that I can't,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. But these journals seem to be handling that, right? That's a whole field where these a lot of these articles don't talk about pedagogy. That's not the point. Some do, but okay. But from what I can tell you about my experience in working with a manuscript that is trying to make its way toward an impact on both theory and pedagogy combined, I can talk to you a little bit about that. All right, and so that is what I did. So these articles that I'm suggesting, Susan Naomi Bernstein's, Tom Peel and Melissa Antonori's, and John Bolzati's, which is coming out sometime, I'd say within the next 4 months, are very helpful in that because they all have a very solid classroom context, theoretical, pedagogical piece. They're all in great shape in that dimension, so that as a reader, you would understand not only how the writer situated his or her practice in what theoretical framework was that scholar teacher moving out from, what the context of their teaching situation was, institutional and materialist context, so that when Susan Naomi Bernstein writes about her students, for example, she's letting you know not only about what's happening in the classroom, but she's letting you know what is happening economically in that area at the time that creates a certain disposition within the students that would then have them be open to what working with Persepolis could bring, right? So the context is strong, and that's I can't emphasize that enough, right? So materialist in the terms of what are the material conditions for learning, not only within the classroom, within the institution, and beyond that. What's the theoretical base? If you're working with a graphic novel, you're also pushing forward and coming from and pushing forward certain theoretical ideas. So there are ideas within, and that's part of the challenge. Part of the challenge is connecting your work to a philosophical, theoretical, materialist framework of some sort, right? Well, I want to work with graphic novels, and I'm working with graphic novels because I'm very connected with, for example, the theories of play and play as connected to writing and invention, and play and writing and invention as connected to thought generation, right? And allowing for space for students to think before before they even know they have words to match to that thought, right? So they're a theorist. So one of the so John Bolzatti, when he was writing, took hold of Jody Shipka. Shipka is a someone who writes on composition and rhetoric, and she talks about play and invention, play and composition. I know Annie and Rachel have done some papers or presentations where they've integrated ideas about play as well. So Susan Naomi Bernstein, in writing about Persepolis, connected her work to ideas of intersectionality, to say that her students, in being constrained economically, politically, according to the tensions of that town at that time, were experiencing an intersectionality of constraint in terms of race, gender, and economics. And so she had a whole section in her article, intersectionality. In fact, she had two theory sections. I know that one was intersectionality and another one might have been related to the graphic novel itself. So that each article that I've come in contact with through the journal has thought very carefully about what's the theoretical, pedagogical grounding connected to something, right? Graphic novels is important. The use of graphic novels is important because it exemplifies and allows us to cultivate a certain way of thinking about not only writing. Okay, so that's very important. Now, so I was looking through this particular essay, which you have a few pages of here. Okay, and I was thinking, well, so I was looking through that article, and I was thinking about Susan's article. I was thinking about this other one, Tom's and Melissa's article. I was thinking about John Bolzatti's article, and I was thinking, well, what categories occupied a good bit of back and forth between the author, writer, in writing the article, and those who were reading the article to help that article along? What were the kinds of conversations? What were the topics? And if I had to create categories, these are them on the first page. All right, so so the for all of them, and it seems to be true in relationship to articles that tie graphic novels to classroom activity, to place the graphic novel or the visual text, working with visual text, in relationship to a rhetorical activity, mm-hmm. right? So there was even an article, and I think it's in the same issue as Tom and Melissa's iBook, right? So in that issue is another article where the teacher, writer, talked about a pedagogy of architecture and design, so that the students that she was working with would look at a residential college, would look at their dorm rooms and communicate what those spaces, so she took actual 3D spaces and had them write about them as if that space itself was the product of rhetorical activity. So it's an interesting juxtaposition, graphic novel, this project of iBooks, and in the same issue, we didn't plan it that way, this other scholar, Kate Fargo Ahern, writing about architectural and design space as if it were a visual text. And so in that, what she did was emphasized, okay, as you could emphasize, decision-making, production choices, audience, as part of rhetorical activity. That seems to be, for these journals, and there are articles here in this special issue of Composition Studies, and you could just look at the titles, that all of them seem to approach the use of graphic material as an occasion for teaching, emphasizing, talking about rhetorical activity. So that everything is a production decision. So what does it mean to talk about art as a rhetorical activity? It means to emphasize the decision-making process and to see everything as a result, everything before you that's laid out there on the page visually as having come by way of decision-making processes. All right? So that seems to be... So with that, you know, you're still teaching rhetoric. And that's why it makes sense that these articles would wind up in journals about teaching writing, because you're teaching rhetorical decision-making, right? You're also teaching reading, because you're teaching dispositions. You're teaching reading dispositions, meaning orientations toward the text, which some are the same as if you were to, or as if a student were to read a print text, right? I read the words in the bubble. I read them in order, right? I look at the picture. I let the picture communicate something to me. There's not that much difference between how I read a series of panels and my storybook, my text, right? But then there are many differences which jar the reader, which alert the reader to know that he or she is not just reading text, and that promote other reading dispositions. All right, so the priorities in terms of the topics or subtopics, what do writers have to address? Not that you have to, but as far as my experience, this is what they address. They address the use of graphics, the reading of them, and the creation of them as a rhetorical activity. Okay. They talk about the affordances of graphic texts. So even though graphic texts are no longer in a kind of basement space of classroom curriculum, still it's new enough that not everyone, so for example, not all the readers of JBW would be versed in what are the affordances of graphic texts, right? So John Bolzatti, in writing about storyboarding, well, he had to define storyboarding apart from comics. So there was a whole section where he said, well, comics do this. Well, storyboarding does that, too. And comics do this, and storyboarding does that, too. So what are the affordances of that particular medium? You might have to do that depending on the journal you publish in, because the audience might not be primarily a graphic novel. Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So JBW isn't primarily, right? Some of these may be. But all, if you look at all these articles, it's as if they're all starting from scratch. They all, you can, just by the titles, you can tell that they've all had to establish the common ground of why graphic in composition, right? What's it linked to? Well, we want our students to be multimodal. Okay, so graphic texts answer that.
I had some questions about this page of the composition studies one.
I
think this is fascinating, and I think it points out, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm just seeing all sorts of, I guess, vectors is the word that comes to mind for, you know, the sort of things that we've been talking about in our group, especially on the second page of the listing.
Yeah.
You know, about the book reviews and what you said about the intersectionality, you know, that they have a whole thing here on Bechdel,
right?
That we've been following up on.
Right.
And so, but I guess one of the things that I was hoping you and I could talk about is sort of how to find a place to shop your wares.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You know, and I think this is a superb example, because, and this is where you can help me out, though. I'm not, when I read, you know, I do read comp theory, but I tend to read it article by article rather than journal by journal. You know,
right.
I don't subscribe, you know, if you know, I'll look for a keyword rather than saying I want something from this journal.
Right.
And so it's, am I right in guessing that composition studies isn't usually this devoted to graphic text? Like, this is what most people would call a special issue.
Right.
So that's one thing that I'd like to point out, and I want to just do this briefly, and then we'll get right back to Hope's stuff. But if we could just look at one page, because I think when it comes to shopping your wares, this is a very... And I promise I'll just do this briefly, because I don't want to cut Hope off. If you just look at the first entry here about college literature, if you just look at the first text, you know, narrative approach to Bechdel's funnel. Yeah, okay, so this is the stuff that we've been doing. But the reason I'm mentioning this here in connection to what Hope has presented, college literature does not usually do graphic novels. Okay, I've published in college literature, and they usually want the dense 20-page article with a ton of footnotes, and they usually want it about literature, and they usually do not ask, how did you teach it? They're saying, you know, what are the broad conceptual frameworks we should think about when we're talking about this work of literature? So I guess my point here is that, and Hope, you know this a ton better than I do, that when you're shopping your stuff around, it helps to look on the website of the journal. Very often they won't just tell you the obvious thing, what they published in the past. They'll tell you very often, our next three issues are going to be about this, that they're going to be... They might have an open call about anything. They might have a particular issue, like an author or a type of text. But sometimes you can save yourself, or you can find yourself an ideal landing place by, if someone says, our 2018 issue is going to be about graphic novels and the Muslim world or something like that. And then you know you've got a hook.
Yeah.
You know, and most journals... are very open, and also it'll save you some trouble. You might be looking at the list of upcoming issues and saying, this is not a date that's going to happen.
Yeah.
My stuff is not on their radar, or that doesn't mean your stuff is bad. It just means they're shopping for something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I think of, you know, I guess if I wanted to give like a one-page primer about what comp studies might be, this is so helpful.
Right.
I think this is great.
Right.
Because I think it shows you all the different ways that the teaching, the book reviews, the fact that they're doing what looks to me like original artwork. I noticed that it's inked by, meaning, you know, that they're doing something like Pantheon in a journal. And so if you look around, you can save everybody involved a whole lot of
heartache. So what I would say is, that it's good to know the journal you are submitting a work to. All right? So, for example, just because composition studies had this special issue doesn't mean that they're never going to publish a graphics work again. In fact, they're open to it because they had a whole issue on it and they like it. So what I would do is, according to the journal, I would look up what articles on a related topic they've published in the past. So anyone who publishes, maybe Jimmy W. is kind of a, you know, we're kind of an extreme because we don't have a tremendous readership. Although we're national, we're all over the world, etc. From 1975, to have a journal sustained for over 40 years is truly exceptional. We have, you know, a very deep history to CUNY. It's a very important journal. But the people that like JBW have a special orientation toward teaching. And there's a special, what's been called a special literature of basic writing. It's its own field. And so we know when we get an article that was originally intended for someplace else, we might not be able to identify where it went first. But we know, we can tell how closely the writer knows the journal.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I just told one author, please allow this article to come home to JBW, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the article was addressing administrators and legislators, and you know, but the article itself is doing something different than just kind of, you know, putting out statistics and all that. It told me that the writer, it didn't matter. We had a relationship for about a year. She, you know, there weren't the references that could have been there from JBW.
Mm-hmm.
When I published in Teaching English in a two-year college, I got a review back. It went through two reviews. One revision, sent it back in, got a whole other set, another revision. It was by the same people. But one of the comments was, and you're publishing, you're looking to publish this in TETYC, you only have one source in your bibliography from that journal. Right?
Yeah.
If you look at the works cited of TETYC, there's a lot of articles in that works cited from TETYC. Same thing with Journal of Basic Writing. There's maybe three or four, right? I'm willing to bet that these articles at least have a few sources from the journal you're publishing in. It's almost, you know, it's almost a sign of, not to say respect, but kind of, you're looking to publish in this journal. Do you know this journal?
Yeah.
Have you looked at the articles in this journal?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say the first thing to do is to think of the journal where you believe your article would fit.
Mm-hmm.
And then look through that journal's history, through JSTOR, what articles like your article have been published in that journal. And so you get to know your audience a little bit more.
Sure.
All right. Now what else? Yes.
Because I think something that
we
would all appreciate learning a little bit more about, because this is something that I've done a lot of reviewing for journals, but I've never been an editor. And that's a big difference. And I'd like to candidly share with them.
Uncompensated work.
It was
just
with
let
them,
you know
it's
that.
Something that
that's it. It's what your hobby is. So you might, you know, you might do whatever the hobby is. It's okay. It's a labor of love. It's
that mindset that you're telling us about that we would have never figured out.
Right.
I mean, I'm assuming for myself.
Right. Right.
But I would have never figured out the mindset that, you know, look, paper's back, let's get rid of it. And also help each other out.
Right.
I mean, like, try and give our own.
Right.
Our own.
Everyone wants to see their numbers racked up
in
the.
Shame in that. This
yeah,
is a business,
right.
too. And people need to earn, and people
well,
need to make a living, or
right.
whatever, and get
right.
themselves out there.
CUNY pays for JBW. We do not make enough money, although we take in money from JSTOR and subscribers, etc. Not enough. CUNY covers. Yeah. What were you going to say?
Because I was interested in your comment that you were reaching out to an author saying, you know, I think JBW is a good place for you to be placing this, right?
They usually find us.
Well, yes, and so one of the things that I'd like to, you know, have you talk a little about it is about, you know, that you'll see on a lot of the websites for journals that it'll say something like queries are welcome.
Right.
You know, that you can sometimes write to an editor and to say, and you know, this depends sometimes on how familiar you are with, you know, like I remember one of the journals that I've published with Dolphin, you know, I've gone bowling with the guy who edits the journal and gone to Met Games with him. So it's just like, Tom, does this sound like, and I'd like to be clear though that, you know, this isn't just a nepotistic game, you know, as a clear example of that, one of my articles, I submitted it to JBW, and Hope was
very informal.
Really,
informally.
Yeah, very informally.
Right.
Because, you know, because I knew how, I wouldn't do it. It's so informally with a journal. And Hope was really, really smart and patient and kind in saying that there's some good stuff here, but this isn't pitched at a basic writing journal. She said, this, we have some long chats about this.
Right.
And she said, you're pitching this. This is about interdisciplinary, you know, stuff and things like this. This is more of a cultural studies piece. And she gave me another suggestion, teaching philosophy. So I submitted it there, and the editors turned that down. But they were also very nice. They said, what we think is really sharp, you know, there's some sharp here about stuff about graphic novels. But they said, my friend, you're not an academic philosopher. That's clear. That the stuff you've written, the stuff that's right is obvious. The stuff that's more ambitious is shaky. They said, go with your strength, which is interdisciplinary stuff about graphic novels. So guess where my journal, you know, the article I wrote, you know, now, it's coming out in a journal. I have some stuff on it here. It's called Dialogue. It's about, you know, teaching interdisciplinary pop culture. So it's one of these things that you have to be patient in shopping around. You do your initial homework, but, you know, what I found, Hope, and I was hoping you could follow up on this a bit, is unless you've been completely lazy in just scattershot submissions, most editors I've worked with, I've very rarely gotten snarky comments. I know that's sort of the reputation that, you know, that some people have, that most people will be saying, there's something here that works. It just doesn't work for us, you know. So here's another direction you might go in, and maybe I could suggest a journal or two.
Right?
Could you say a little bit about, because the editing stuff is not something I've done much.
Right. Okay. Well, the times in which we say this is really not for us, to tell you the truth, we don't reject that much. Even when something is rejected, it's up to that author, writer, because they get a list as to, not to say a list, but a description. Maybe they just, you know, want to take those comments, rewrite the piece, and submit it to us again. There's nothing to prevent you from doing that. If you get rejected from a text, from a journal, you have comments there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go according to what those comments are, then it will be closer to. Now, we don't really suggest other journals. We did, because we were colleagues. Sometimes we'll get submissions that say a grad student has written. You could tell it's from a class. Or we'll get an ESL submission that's, you know, very finely focused on ESL. Or we'll get kind of administrative stuff, and we know it wasn't. But we don't generally say we don't recommend what the other journal would be. We say this doesn't seem to fit our readership, and while we like this or that, it doesn't seem to fit our readership. And the authors pretty much understand that because they, like you say, they're shopping around, which is very good. But they could save themselves that trouble. If they looked at our journal, and if you look at the journal, you'll know if you're on target. You know, you'll know. You'll have more of an understanding. JSTOR is helpful. I think the way I suggested So did teaching philosophy suggest to you dialogue? Did they tell you which?
No, but they sense, you know, the basic tenor of their comments was, you know, our journal basically does ABC.
Right.
We do academic philosophy that's teaching related. And,
right.
And then they basically said, you're not doing academic philosophy, or at least
right.
you're not doing it well. That's not my
right.
training. You know, so there's, you know, they can sort of give you the keywords that you might be,
right.
you know, looking at.
That's
you know, is it,
that's right.
you know, American cultural studies, pop culture,
right.
interdisciplinary. And then,
right.
you know, then you could start
right.
winnowing. And it just turned out that a new journal started, which was affiliated with a conference that I went to for a dozen years, which happened to be affiliated with the journal edited by the guy I went bowling with. So all
right.
of a sudden, I'm saying, I'm on familiar terrain again.
Right.
You know, we have a way of talking to each other. And
right.
Then it was almost instantly accepted.
Right, right.
You know, but sometimes you gotta, you know, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with, you know, you gotta have a thick skin about it. You know,
right.
that it's, and you know.
Right. A lot depends on how you align your work. So if you're aligning your work with, say, other, you know, pop culture icons and, you know, and mythologies and, you'll know what the key, like you say, what the keywords are. And I use JSTOR a lot. I use the academic search engines through KBCC library. And I put in very general things. And I see what journals come up. And I'm always very... I'm always very interested in what journals are publishing something like. So, for example, Gene, maybe you'll help me at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But I teach Dead Man Walking, but the way in which I teach it is not to argue for or against the death penalty, but to offer a model of someone's reflection and empathetic growth. And that's what I want the students to see, that here's an instance of someone, the main character, Helen, growing empathetically. And I have a very strong connection to that book. Every time I teach it every fall. I would love to write something about it. So I've been going on to Google Scholar. So what do I Google? I Google Regine composition. I see what comes up. Nothing. Then, you know, but, and then I go on the KBCC database. I do the same thing. I get some leads. I see nobody really has written about it in terms of composition classes, which could be a good thing because then what I have to say might be new. But I need leads, and you do too. You need leads for journals. So I found a woman. Her name is Deborah Campbell. She teaches at Colby. And I saw that she wrote an article teaching the Catholic novel. Why did it take me so long? I couldn't get access to that novel, to that article. But I have a name of someone. I looked her up, and I saw all her articles. I saw where she published, etc. I might write to her. I've done that in the past to say, could you send me a copy of the article?
Mm-hmm.
I noted the journal she published in. We don't have it in our database. But, you know, I'm a little closer. Then there was another article I found that just mentioned using Prejean, but in terms of an exercise related to stimulating students' sense of empathy. So empathy is another keyword for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to know what the keywords are, right? So it could be Persepolis and women. It
mm-hmm.
could be Persepolis
mm-hmm.
women composition. It could be, Susan Naomi Bernstein worked with girls. I think she called them adolescents. So you have to find your keywords,
mm-hmm.
see who has done something alongside, closely related, or not so closely. Just get closer. Just each time get closer. You can write to these authors. ask them for a copy if it's not in our database, and you know, send the query in that way. And when you do send a query in, I would say to remark on an article within that journal that captured your attention that you feel indicates that this article might suit the audience. So it's not that. In fact, someone did that just recently. I have an email I didn't answer from yesterday, where she wrote me a note and she said, "Well, I've read these articles, blah 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 blah, four." And she named four of them, and she said, "I'd like to do a review essay on the ways in which second language learning is incorporated into basic writing classes, and I would use these articles." I don't know. We don't really do review essays, so my answer to her is, if you want to write an article that is kind of like a thought piece, do it. But we don't do review essays, so I don't know what she's thinking of, a certain genre. What it's indicating to me, even though she's a grad student, it's indicating to me she has an investment in the journal. So that's.
Yeah, and what you meant, because you have to think past the editor to the audience, okay? Because an editor is basically saying, I'm putting this in the journal because the people who pay money for this journal will want to read that article.
Yeah, representing
okay,
the brand.
You have to look past, you know, because some people say, what I really need is a line on a CV, and what an editor is saying is what I need is an article that is worth selling to my audience.
Right,
Also,
a lot of these journals, I think what you're saying is that it doesn't, it's not, you know, it doesn't equate to money, because a lot of these journals are non-profit. Oh, I also want to show you. But what they do need from you, and why you're so important, is that they need articles. And you are thinking, oh, they have so many submissions. Oh, they don't need, you know, another one, or I'll never be considered. No, sometimes there's nothing. You're waiting for your next issue, and you have nothing, right? It's nice when you have a backlog, but
yeah,
it takes a long time to get these things ready, and it would be so wonderful to have then something new comes along and think, this is clean, it's fresh, you know, it looks like this author is interested, and, you know, it might have a quick turnaround. And great. So you're thinking there's a whole long line. But really, it's not that. How many people are doing this? Really? This is so difficult. So, all right. So journals. All right. So this one here, where there's a lot of small print, is a journal called Keros. And Keros is multimodal. So I just took the first few pages of the journal because it's very encyclopedic. Sometimes if you get one article that tells you so much about, it's number one, it's recent. So that writer had the task of being up to date, So you're using a 2014, 2015 article. If you can trust that it's a good article, you get a sense of that. All right, now you know, by dealing with the work cited, you know what the current scholars in the field are.
Well,
right?
something would jump off the page here for all of us. This is on page six of this.
Yeah.
From Hope, if you can look at these bottom two paragraphs,
yeah,
you know what name's going to jump out there.
Right.
Is McLeod's Understanding Comics?
Right.
I mean, which is like our Bible. We've probably discussed it in almost every section of this meat of our fig.
Yes.
So you know, so that's when you're saying, okay,
right?
They would talk. I can talk that language to this journal and this audience in a really informed way.
And watch how they do it. Meaning, they're not starting from, hey, have you ever heard of? No. You know, they're starting from, well, as someone, as we've noticed, you know, in the cloud, making the point, he's given us the concept of, you know, and there's a little flow quote of a term that's now been coined by the cloud that now has well circulated within the literature, right? So that the starting point is not back here for this particular journal, it's here. So this is very good. And this is from Keros, which is very multimodal, but I want to let you know about it because it's encyclopedic. It's just got everything about graphics and comics. It seems to me, I don't really, I haven't spent enough time with this article to know, other than to showcase a new form of presenting student work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure on the aim of this particular project, which was called Perspicuous Objects. It's a web text that students contributed to.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I thought it was very good, and it also articulated some of these concerns on the parts that I bracketed on page 5, which has and 6, which has to do with a new way of reading. So again, it's about for the articles that we would see, letting the audience know what the affordances of graphic texts are, dealing with definitions, dealing with new vocabulary, identifying new dispositions toward reading, attention to play or some theoretical framework, making crossovers into connections. So if you're going to publish, say, in a comp red journal, you're going to want to deal with the fact of rhetorical activity, dispositions toward writing and reading, crossovers and interconnections, theoretical and pedagogical renegotiations. So, for example, John Bolzatti has a basically his frame for the article on storyboarding is invention and transfer. So there's transfer theory. There's a whole bunch of writing that's been done on, is transfer real? When does it happen? What does it mean to teach for transfer? Should we still be even setting transfer as a goal? Well, he says in the types of invention activities that storyboarding allows, we are teaching for transfer. So he's got transfer in the beginning of the article as his framework, and transfer again before the article is over. He has a whole other section on some proof, some bit of evidence that students are transferring. Mm-hmm. They're transferring what they're learning from one context to another. So, but for a comp red journal, transfer theory is right in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then again, knowing the journal, seeing what they published, related to what you were doing, and seeing how they framed it, that's all you need. You need a frame. Okay. All right. So let's see what else. And so getting to know the journals. All right. So I'm telling you about Keros. Okay. Now, I'm pushing this. So there was a little blurb in the English department newsletter about Parler Press.
Right.
So Parler Press puts out these the best of independent rhetoric and composition journals for each year. And I know about this collection. It comes out every year because they asked Journal of Basic Writing to contribute to it. And we have since 2012. We skipped one year because we just weren't ready according to their deadline. But what I like about this, and I copied the their flyer from Parler Report Press from their 2014 edition here. What I like about this collection is that it allows me to get to know other journals. So it's an easy way And that's how I found this article on comics from Kairos. Mm-hmm. I would never have known about Kairos, but as it appears in the table of contents, there are other journals I could know more about. Now, I bet this journal, looking at, okay, so suppose you were doing a graphics project with an after-school group or a library group or some group that is doing a prison education group, right? That's not connected to the traditional university. So if you were doing a graphics type of curriculum, you might look at the journal, the community literacy journal. And then your frame would be, well, in community literacy, we emphasize certain values, we emphasize certain issues. Let's work it out through graphic novels. Here's what I did, all right? Same thing with Harlot. Harlot is a feminist, queer, in terms of questioning sexualities and gender identities. Graphic novels are right.
Right.
Yes. Do you see? So sometimes you can find your frame by just allowing the focus of certain journals speak to you, right? Mm-hmm. So Harlot, could you think of now that might generate some aspect of what you know of your graphic novel curriculum? Maybe there is something that, you know, where the discussions turn on gender studies, right? That could be it, and you could look up Harlot. And you know, even though this is not this particular title is not dealing with graphic, you could look up Harlot and see, well, maybe they did publish something on graphic novels. Let me see. Or, if not, I bet they would. That would be... All right, Journal of Basic Writing. Okay, well, we heard about that. We do. Right? Journal of Teaching Writing. They're pretty open. They're pretty open, pretty fluid. But then again, you'd have to get to know them a little bit more. Peter Elbow is on that board, but there's no reason there. They also publish teachers from secondary schools also publish. So it's not just teaching writing in college, it's teaching writing. Kairos, yes, we know, right? Literacy and Composition Studies. I don't know. Understanding Computer Programming.
No.
Maybe.
I don't know.
As a literacy.
There is so
but
much.
But you see,
yeah.
They're dealing with what constitutes literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And reading and dealing with graphic novels is
a
literacy.
You can even mention motion comics.
Digital comics.
The new, like, the Mayflower stuff.
It would
right.
very
yeah.
much speak
right.
to it. Really.
Right.
Yeah.
Because now, looking at the title, Literacy in Composition Studies, I bet this journal deals with new literacies.
Are you kidding me? Emojis.
Right.
I had a student say, Professor, would you mind if I wrote a paper just in emojis? He goes, yeah, would you mind if I wrote a paper in emojis? And
try it.
Like, okay. I love it. I love
and
the
then
fact
have
that,
an
yeah.
accompanying text.
Yeah.
Right? See what you get.
Yeah.
Pedagogy is, they're worth exploring because their focus is pedagogy.
Mm-hmm.
Present tense. I don't know. It looks kind of multimodal here. Microsoft's Kinect and the politics of the body.
It's actually a video game article.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because Kinect, the Microsoft Kinect is...
Comic books.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Very good. Reflections. Now, Reflections is community literacy, community working within communities on literacy. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm. It depends. It depends on what work you did with a particular community-based group. Writing Lab newsletter.
I don't know.
That one I don't know. Because this has more. This is more for tutors.
Mm-hmm.
But there, I think we have, you know, another five possibilities.
Sure.
Right? But that's another way to do it. So it's not, I'm going to write my article, and when I have my article perfectly crafted, I'm going to find the perfect journal. No. It's a negotiation.
Yeah.
And as you're writing the article, you're getting an idea of where you can send it. Maybe as you're writing it, you have a sense that it could go here or there or there. But you have some direction.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And can I point out something that part of it is writers looking for journals. There's an opposite process, which is of journals looking for writers.
Yeah.
And there's one thing I just wanted to point out really briefly. It's the last page of my thing. It's, I don't know if you know about the Penn State CFP site.
Yeah.
If you don't, you should. It's basically, this is a big bulletin board where people say, it's the very last page. There are just hundreds and hundreds of listings where it's basically either conference directors or journals or people who are putting together book collections or stuff saying, we're looking for stuff on this. And you know, and this is one of the, I don't publish it the way I used to, but when I did, I'd be looking at this thing all the time. And this is, you know, and this is, they're basically begging for you to send a query, say, you know, maybe. And I just think it's a, this is a sort of, how should I say, this is a little earlier in the process. This is really more designed for people who are trying to submit papers for academic conferences before journals. But it's not, you know, very often, you know, at least at CUNY, when it comes to things like PSC CUNY grants, if you've gone to a couple of conferences and you say, I have a paper in process or an article in process, that you know, the fact that you've presented at a couple of conferences gives you some traction, some credibility.
Mm-hmm.